Tech und Rara, ein Podcast der Netzpiloten mit spannenden Gästen über Tech und Rara.
Willkommen bei Tech und Rara, dem Podcast der Netzpiloten und Mitglied im Brand 1 Podcast-Netzwerk. Ich bin Daniel Mendes-Jenner vom Common Grounds Forum und ich bin der Host der heutigen Folge. Diesmal haben wir nicht im Studio aufgenommen, sondern live vor Ort, und zwar in Brüssel bei der Transform It Europe. Das ist eine Konferenz rund um Nachhaltigkeit, Digitalisierung und Energie, bei der sich UnternehmerInnen und politische EntscheiderInnen treffen, um gemeinsam Lösungen zu finden. Wir von den Netzpiloten wollten wissen, welche Ideen haben europäische Firmen im Umgang mit der Klimakrise? Und wie reagieren sie auf den steigenden Energiebedarf? Zum Beispiel durch KI, Streaming und alles andere, was digital derzeit so mitläuft. Für genau diese Fragen haben wir mit Mary Potter gesprochen. Sie ist Supply Chain Renewables Program Managerin für die EMEA-Region bei Schneider Electric Sustainability Business, also für Europa, den Nahen Osten und Afrika. Ihre Aufgabe ist es, mit großen Unternehmen an Dekarbonisierungsstrategien zu arbeiten. Und konkret heißt das, wie kann man Lieferketten mit Hilfe von erneuerbaren Energien klimafreundlicher machen? Dabei nutzt sie unter anderem digitale Tools wie Zygo. Was genau das ist, erklärt sie im Gespräch am besten selbst. Und noch ein Hinweis. Da das Event international war und Mary aus den USA kommt, haben wir die Folge auf Englisch aufgenommen. Und jetzt viel Spaß beim Hören. Amazing. Okay. Hello, guys. So as you might have been wondering, we are starting in English today in this episode of the podcast because I'm sitting here at Transform IT during the lunch break recording this live podcast, and I'm not sitting here alone. I'm sitting next to Mary Potter. Hello.
Hi.
And yeah, you might have already seen it in the title of this episode. Today we're going to talk a lot about the energy transition, but also the interconnection to digitalization that comes along with that topic. And yeah, maybe you can elaborate a bit why we've chosen you to sit here to talk about this.
Yeah, thanks so much. I think you all have chosen me because I'm a renewable energy expert, which, you know, I'm really, really grateful for. And thanks so much for also accommodating me in English, because I definitely don't speak German. So
we can train it.
Yeah, possibly train. My maiden name is Meyer, so it's in the blood, but definitely not there today.
And in our pre-discussion, in our pre-meeting, you told me that you wanted to become the owner of a water plant, right?
Oh, yeah. When I started university, I was bright-eyed and thought that I was going to become a corporate lawyer. And so I was working at a law firm and just went to a career fair one day, actually, for extra credit. And at that career fair was Schneider Electric. And so I walked up to the table. I started talking to them about an internship that they had at the time. And I was like, wow, this actually sounds really interesting. And fast forward, I ended up getting the internship. And fast forward 3 months later, I learned all about the climate crisis and really fell head over heels for sustainability and realizing that we have to protect this little blue planet. And from that, I thought, okay, I'm going to go into renewable electricity. And so I had this vision that, you know, I'd work in the corporate space for a little bit, but then I was going to build a hydropower plant on the river in which I grew up with, which was the Ohio River back in the U.S. in Kentucky. That river, by the way, is a kilometer wide. But I thought, okay, I'm going to build a hydropower plant. I'm going to sit, you know, in the office next to it and sell electricity to the local regulated utilities at the time. Now I think that's very silly, and it really is silly, but that was my vision a decade ago. So
yeah, but it sounds like a great attempt for a world record. So I love the idea. Maybe we can realize it in some other century. But you also told me that you work at Schneider Electric, and I guess that many people know the company for their products, but not everyone, because I think it's also mainly a B2B context, right? So
it is
this for business products, but you're also quite involved in sustainability with the company. Could you explain this a bit more?
Sure. So Schneider Electric is a multinational conglomerate company. We're part of the global Fortune 500. And what we do is specialize in energy management. So that can include things from uninterrupted power supply systems to switches to a lot of other electronic manufacturing. But where I work is in our sustainability business, where we're helping, you know, other large multinationals and increasingly small and medium enterprises to tackle sustainability goals. So whether they're trying to, file, sustainability reporting or have a strategy, maybe adopt renewable electricity, where I would hope they would do, we can help them in all facets of that. So.
Mm-hmm. And what would you say make your approach different to others? Because I guess the people that are coming from the energy industry know there are a lot of different solutions, all like trying to approach this whole strategy process. But what makes your process like kind of unique?
Yeah, I think, the energy market in general is massive, right? Mm-hmm. There's lots of different end users. You have developers, utilities. You have regulated and deregulated markets. And so traditionally, for the last 50 years or so, the energy market has kind of stayed to those sorts of players. But now you have corporations who have huge electricity, renewable electricity goals they need to decarbonize, and their utilities very simply are not giving them what they need. They're not giving them renewables. So what they started doing and where we help is helping them to navigate that new space as a corporate buyer to realize that, I don't just need to go to my local utility or I don't need to just install solar panels on my roof. There are other ways that I can take advantage of the renewable market, whether it's buying certificates or entering into utility scale power purchase agreements or things like that. So we have a very practical approach to how corporations themselves can access the market.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for me, this sounds like you're really approaching the side of like the energy production. Mm-hmm. And I would also like to talk a bit about energy consumption, because I think that many companies and also like many people that are trying to find solutions for a more sustainable world are really like scared of talking about the consumption topic at all. Mm-hmm. Is this a topic that is like coming up in your daily work?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, companies consume in different ways, in different industries. So for instance, if we get into probably one of the most focused industries is the tech industry, right? I mean, they use increasingly large amounts of electricity, both in their data centers. But then as AI becomes bigger and bigger, they're also using it more and more with their processing. So consumption is definitely a big one. I think the other thing with consumption is we think about what a company consumes today. But as we look at other decarbonization levers, we see that electrification is also a significant way that companies will move towards decarbonization. So we can expect a big shift from things that are normally powered by things like gas to being powered by electric, and that electricity also needs to be renewable. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, actually, I also told this at the other panel discussion we already had earlier today. If I think about data centers, I also think a lot about like sector coupling. What do I mean by that? This basically means that you can not just talk about the energy, but you can also talk about the heat that is produced by a data center, for example, and how you can use this heat to fuel or power other kind of like fabrics or other kind of farms. And one example I experienced just like 2 weeks ago in northern Germany in Nibel on the GreenTech campus was a data center that found a solution how to use the heat, like this enormous amount of heat you're producing by that, mm-hmm. to like use it for a farm of algae products that they can use in like food, but also in other industry applications. I thought that this is like a very interesting approach to see this whole topic. Do you know other examples from this area? Or?
Oh, man, that's a great example. I think just in general, people are trying to figure out unique ways that they can decarbonize, right? Whether it's, utilizing waste that they wouldn't have utilized before. I think we heard that earlier today as well. I know that there's, for instance, a lot of food and beverage companies that are utilizing their food waste to now make biomass processors, which are creating electricity or heat for them in that way. So I think overall, we're just seeing more and more creative ways of how we can use things that we would normally throw away, which kind of goes into circularity as well. It's all connected. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, that's pretty cool. You also told me that you're also working on a kind of platform that is contributing to all these changes. I thought the name was Zygo, right?
Yeah, Zygo. So Zygo is a suite of different platforms, kind of SaaS-based platforms that the Schneider Electric sustainability business
like software
created.
As a service, right?
That? Yeah, yes. Exactly. Software as a service. So we do it in a lot of different ways. We have, so Zygo is kind of our brand name, but we have like Zygo Power, which helps developers and corporations enter into power purchase agreements directly. So that's kind of making that process a lot more efficient. There is Zygo Network, which used to be known as the Neo Network, which I actually helped to create. And that is helping to connect corporations and developers and actually have a lot of different thought sharing and to learn from one another and in terms of this space, which is rapidly evolving all the time. And then there's also Zygo Hub, which is where we run our supply chain decarbonization programs, which I mentioned before earlier today, like the Energize program and the Zero Carbon Project. And then the last one is Zygo Activate. So there's four different ones. And Activate helps smaller companies to both calculate their carbon footprint, put together a plan, and then ultimately connect with solution providers to execute. So all around decarbonization. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And is it just like a digital platform or are there any like special AI features implemented as almost always today or...
Yeah, they're more so platforms, and they all, I would say the nice thing about Zygo is they're all tailored to meet a company's specific need. The way that, you know, a small company that's maybe across, let's say, Germany and the Netherlands wants to decarbonize versus a multinational is going to be significantly different. And so these platforms are kind of tailored to meet those different companies at wherever they kind of are in the journey. So... Yeah,
actually, it's quite interesting because if we're already talking about AI, I also found some numbers about this topic because, I mean, now in 2024, so last year, we had about like 1.5% of the overall like energy consumption just for like AI applications, like 415 terawatt hours. And I think this is like quite an astonishing number, right?
Yeah, because I was looking also at some figures before, I think that's like the size of Germany's electricity consumption, which is quite insane if you think about it. And that's just data centers. If you were to add, for instance, all the future AI growth, I think data centers are expected to double in terms of electricity consumption in the next couple of years alone. So it's going to continue to use more and more and more electricity. I used to have a manager a couple of years ago that was a big renewable electricity contract negotiator for one of the big tech companies. And so he used to say, you know, we won't build data centers unless we have renewable energy to back that up. I think with the scale that data centers are growing at, that's going to become more and more difficult, especially if you think about places like Ireland, for example. Ireland is a huge data center capital, but how much electricity can Ireland really handle from renewables, you know? So I think it's going to become more and more difficult, and there's definitely ways around it, but it needs strategic, creative thinking.
Yeah, actually, this is quite an interesting point because in Germany, we also have this huge discussion of how this whole energy consumption topic will shape the locations. Will companies change their location inside of Germany or inside of Europe, or will they leave the continent because of the energy demand they have and the energy demand they can fulfill if they use like solar panels in Saudi Arabia or somewhere else?
Yeah.
This is also a topic you're confronted with?
Yeah, definitely. I think... typically, like data centers are another good example. They have put their data centers in places that are very strategic for internet traffic, right? So, for instance, Ireland, I already mentioned, I won't necessarily go into all of them around the world, but I think as renewables become more and more pivotal, I think companies will have to be more considerate of where they put their operations to fill in that gap, essentially. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I think this is also interesting regarding like how we are dealing with this whole increase of efficiency, because everyone is talking about, okay, now we have new solutions that don't even need so much energy. But in the end, I have the impression that every time when we are reaching this new level of efficiency, it's not leading to a decrease in energy demand.
Yeah.
But to an increase in like capacity we can use afterward. I mean, I guess you are aware of the rebound effect as well, right? Of this whole term about it. So the rebound effect says that every time when we have like these efficiency solutions, it just leads to an increase of like consumption as well, because we have new kind of application areas that we can use it for.
Yeah. And
yeah. I don't know. What do you think about this? What's your take on that?
Yeah, I guess efficiency is that thing that everybody knows about, right? And I love the saying that the most sustainable electricity that you can use is the one you don't use, which is what efficiency is all about, is reducing the amount you use. But the way that I think about just overall electricity demand is electricity demand is going to increase substantially regardless of what we do with efficiency. So it's about still having those efficiency solutions to make sure that we are using less energy, or else that exponential effect will be even bigger than we expected it, pretty much. So I think they both go hand in hand very well.
And as you're working in this whole supply chain part of your company, I would be very interested. Is this something you can also see when you work with your customers or like your partners? Is there like this huge increase in energy consumption now because of AI, because of other topics?
Not that we've seen so far. If I think about thinking about Schneider's own zero carbon project and focusing on that, you know, we have 1,000 suppliers in that project that we focus on. And they range across all industries. You can imagine, you know, we're a manufacturing company, so we're going to have tech is going to be in there, chemicals, raw materials, contract manufacturers, all sorts of suppliers are in that mix. So I don't think we've yet seen the big effects of kind of AI unless, you know, we look at those really big tech companies that we have. Otherwise, I would say, you know, with our suppliers in general, efficiency still is the number one thing that they look at. And the reason why for that is efficiency always normally comes with a cost savings, because if you're reducing the amount of energy that you need, you don't need to buy that energy in the first place to power your equipment and those sorts of things. And then renewables tends to be the next biggest one, because, again, you have this cost savings component as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think cost savings is a quite interesting point, because for me, I'm also working in a lot of different projects, not just here in the podcast. And we are always dealing with this question of how we can get people on board to really be open for a more sustainable kind of digitalization and a more sustainable approach of energy consumption. And I think cost savings is always a very good argument to get people on board. Do you have any other arguments you also use in your discussions with partners?
The biggest excuse that we hear from our suppliers and from suppliers across industries is, oh, it's too expensive. In that case, we are, of course, showing the cost savings examples. But the other funny one is, oh, you're the first person that has asked us for this. And internally within Schneider, we always giggle about this, because what we turn around and say is, we are definitely not the first ones asking you. I'm sure Siemens and Eaton and ABB and all of the other, you know, competitors that we have that you also supply to are also going to be asking you this. We see it also in pharmaceuticals. So, having that singular coalition together so that you can go back and say, it's not just one customer asking you to decarbonize, but it's us as an entire industry, which is where the Energize program is so powerful. I think is really, really important, because we think about it as, you know, convincing our suppliers to decarbonize. But really what the person is doing that you're talking to is going and convincing their leadership, because you can have a sustainability person at your supplier who believes everything that you're saying, but ultimately they need to make a business case to their CEO or CFO that they need to implement these sustainability measures. So
actually, this is quite an interesting topic. I'm also doing my research on my thesis, especially on this topic of how we can convince these decision makers. And I think one very important person in this whole process that is often like forgotten is the assistant of these decision makers, because in my view, I think they're always the person who can set up the agenda and set up the things the CEOs are dealing with. And I think this is always like quite interesting person to get in touch with if you really want to change something from inside of the company.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I think, yeah, normally the people that we're talking to, if you're trying to convince somebody that leading sustainability at another company to adopt something, you probably actually don't need to. They probably already believe it themselves, or else why are they in a sustainability role? And in some sense, but what you need to empower them with is that business case for them to take it up to their leadership and the company overall to help them convince others of why they should do something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think this is quite an interesting topic of how to get like this influencers inside of all these companies, like these people that can really multiply this whole approach of it. I don't know, how is it in your company? Do you have a lot of people that are like really into this topic? Or because I think your company is quite known for being very sustainable in all the rankings, but yeah, how do you see it in your culture of the company?
Yeah, in the culture of the company, you know, I think most employees at Schneider are there because they kind of, in some ways, because Schneider is a sustainable company, that definitely drives them. And so it's in a lot of different parts of our culture. You know, we're constantly trying to make our products more sustainable themselves. We're constantly trying to push our suppliers and kind of be at the forefront of different sustainability initiatives, like with the Zero Carbon Project, which is a very ambitious project that we took on back in 2021. Yeah, I'm just trying to think how further we do that. I think through partnership at other companies with these sustainability folks is the other part that we see it.
Maybe you have some cool free time activities or something.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I actually really like this climate frisk idea that was showed earlier today about the different, like, you know, taking climate change and making it into a bit of a team building game. I feel like that's definitely something that's part of like the Schneider Electric culture, is focusing in on kind of the big picture, but also focusing in on how can we make our customers more sustainable. I think that's a big part that for us, it's beyond just what we do as a company. It's what we help others to implement. So whether it's, you know, in the switches we make and making those more efficient so our customers don't have to worry about doing those things in touch. It's definitely a collaborative approach. I think even recently, you know, we've been trying to think of how do we partner more as an industry as well to just make it much more clear for the suppliers to take action. So,
Yeah, I think you're raising a very interesting point, because even though we're talking about a very like digital topic, even though we're talking about something that's very technical, this whole human component of this seems to be very important. And if you're not getting the humans on board, not just the decision makers, but also the whole team, it always tend to be like hard to like overcome the barriers. I don't know how you're perceiving it, but I've seen it a lot of times. Yeah,
I honestly think that the human component is the single most important component of all of this, because I think we think of ourselves as companies talking to each other, but the other day it's not. For instance, you and I are talking to each other person to person, and that's how all kind of conversations happen, is it's a human element of you connecting with someone and trying to convince them of something.
You can take a second to think, no worries.
Yeah. Oh, I remember now. The biggest challenge actually that we face at the sustainability business in general when it comes to renewable energy or reporting or anything of that nature is actually internal engagement. So let's say, for instance, we do a lot of power purchase agreement consulting and helping businesses to adopt, which is a great source of renewable electricity for their business. Our biggest challenge is not the market. It's not on putting together a financial model in case. It's not any of that. It is always helping others within the company to have that internal alignment and move forward towards a decision. So that's where I think the human element is so important, is whenever you're convincing others or you're trying to get everyone on the same page, you have to take into account those individual people and their personalities and quite honestly, how to make their job as easy for them as possible, rather than it being an uphill battle for them to come and help you, for instance.
Yeah. Wow, I just got called by one of our panelists from before. So I'm also like losing my train right now. And we were talking about engagement, right? Wow, it really got me out of the discussion.
I know we've also gone down quite a bit of a rabbit hole of supplier engagement in those things.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, but I think in the whole topic, it's always very interesting to see what are the things that are like really like making the people stay motivated in this case and staying like on track with digitalization.
Yeah.
And I think it's also very interesting to see what kind of channels we have to use to reach them. I mean, now we're sitting in a podcast. We have like these internal games you can play. But I'm always thinking about like the right platforms we have to use to reach the people to really change something.
Yeah, I think repetition's really key. And that's what we've kind of learned with some of our like supply chain programs, because we used to think that, oh, we can just do one webinar, like we can do two webinars a year to teach them about renewables and then they'll be able to go and take action. And that's just not how people tend to work. They need repetition and they need it from many different channels, whether that's maybe a white paper and then maybe, you know, that being reinforced from an article or from a podcast that they hear from somebody else. It might be attending an event, which is where I think events are so impactful, because you could have somebody say, you know, 1/5 of what a white paper would say, but it's going to be so much more impactful than someone reading that white paper, you know? So I really believe that, you know, in the human element and having repetition and through many different channels and that thing. That's why I like this podcast.
Yeah. It's great that you're here. I'm very glad that you join in. And do you have any other examples of like podcasts or platforms or alliances that you really like that are like fostering this topic?
Yeah, I'm going to give a shout out to the Scope 3 peer group. Oliver Hurry runs that out of London. I think he's done a really fantastic job of bringing together a lot of different people and bringing together, you know, a group of people that are really looking to fix challenges. I think that's really important. Sharing ideas, I think, is another thing. There are many different platforms for that. But what I don't think we actually have enough of is actually talking about the challenges that people are facing and workshopping that in different kinds of ways. So I think the Scope 3 peer group does a great job of that. I think they'll continue to do that as well.
Mm-hmm. With regards to the time, because I think you have to leave quite punctual. How much time do we have left for you?
Let's see. I think we are just out of time, unfortunately.
All right. That's no problem at all. But I'm glad that I could still manage to talk to you for about half an hour. I'm very glad that you were here. So yeah, with that, I don't want to like prolong this any longer. I hope you have a great way home. And thank you very much for being here. I have a little present to give for you.
Oh, thank you.
Soap bubbles.
I love these soap bubbles. They're such a great idea. And thank you so much for having me. Really appreciate it.
For sure.
It's great talking to you, both during this podcast as well as before. So
yeah, it was a pleasure. And as always, all the other informations you will find below in our end card and in our outro. But thank you very much for this time now. Goodbye. See you soon.
Bye. Thanks, everyone.
In den Show Notes findet ihr alle Links zu unserer Gästin Mary Podder und wo ihr ihr folgen könnt. Vielen Dank auch an die Transformed Europe für die Möglichkeit, den Podcast auf ihrer Hauptbühne live aufnehmen zu können. Wenn der Podcast euch gefallen hat, schenkt uns gerne eine Höchstbewertung auf Apple Podcasts, Spotify oder der Plattform eurer Wahl. Das hilft uns nämlich enorm. Danke fürs Zuhören und bis zur nächsten Folge.
Tech und Rara, ein Podcast der Netzpiloten mit spannenden Gästen über Tech und Rara.
Diese Folge des Netzpiloten-Podcasts Tech und Rara wurde moderiert von Daniel Mendes-Jenner und produziert von Lennart Brauer. Den Schnitt machte Marvin Struck. Tech und Rara ist ein Produkt der Netzpiloten AG und ist Mitglied im Brand 1 Netzwerk.